Our scripture lesson this morning is found on page 78 in your New Testament, if you'd like to follow along. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare, but here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then his son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate."
I always said that that boy would grow up to be trouble. He was a fussy baby, would never allow his mother to lay him down so she could get her work done. Anytime he got laid down, he just started crying until she picked him up, so she had to do all of her chores, either carrying him or with him strapped on her back. And then that fussy baby grew into what his mother called a sensitive child. Now, I don't like to speak ill of people, mind you, but you do need to know a few things about this family, and this is one of them. That sensitive child could be absolutely charming. He had this beautiful smile that could light up a room. He had a laugh that would ring out and lift your spirits, and then in the next second, everything would change. If that child did not get what he wanted when he wanted it, if he was tired, if he was hungry, if, heaven forbid, someone actually said no, well, tears and tantrums and drama, the scenes that I saw, I'm telling you, and those were just the ones that happened in public when his mother was there trying to make everything work out well. I can't even imagine what it was like in that home. It's not that he was an unkind child. He just wasn't a nice boy. I never saw him share a toy or a treat. He didn't seem to notice when another child was hurt or unhappy. It didn't matter if the adults in his world approved of him or not. It made no difference. Not like his older brother. Now that was a lovely boy. So polite, so respectful, so helpful. He always would do what he was asked to do as soon as he was asked. If you spoke with him, he'd answer politely, but if you didn't speak to him, he just stayed quiet. He never interrupted adult conversations with demands or questions. He would help his mother try and take care of this unruly younger brother. He was kind to the other children. He was a sweet boy who grew up to be a nice man. But none of that rubbed off on his little brother. That demanding, difficult child grew up to be a disrespectful and selfish young man. Anyway, he was always needing the attention, the help. He, for example, he would never do his chores without being asked multiple times, usually. Sometimes they even had to try to bribe him, and even then he didn't always finish them up. I can't remember how many times I walked down the road by their fields and saw his father and his older brother slaving in the sun while he tarried under the shade of a nearby tree. He always wanted to have the best of everything. His brother's hand-me-downs? Not a chance. He refused to wear them. He always wanted the best portion of every meal. Of course, that should have gone to his father, or then after that to his older brother, but somehow he always managed to be the one to get it. I think it was because, in spite of all of the selfishness, he was really very difficult to dislike. He had a certain charm. He had a winsome smile. He was a handsome boy, or at least all the girls in the village seemed to think so. And so he managed to always work situations, manipulate them and people to get what he wanted. At least that's how I saw things. I think, and all the other women in the town agree with me on this, by the way, but I think that if his parents hadn't been so easy on him, things might have turned out differently. If they had been more demanding, if they had drawn tighter lines, if they had not made so many excuses. But they loved that boy beyond reason. And they wanted only good for him. And so here we are. Now, I don't like talking out of school. You know that. You know I would never do that. But really, if they had just acted a little earlier, maybe that horrible final scene wouldn't have happened. Now, of course, none of us were there to witness it, but servants, they have sharp ears and quick tongues. And so the word was out in the village rather quickly after the scene. That ungrateful child came up to his father and demanded his inheritance now. Can you imagine? His father was standing there in front of him in good health, and he looked his father in the eye and said, "I want half of the estate, and I want it now." He might as well have just looked at his father and said, "Dad, I just wish you were dead." Amounted to the same thing. It was an outrageous request. It was beyond insulting, disrespectful. Oh, any other father, any man with a backbone would have beaten that boy for his insolence or sent him away, but not this father. No. Not this father. He gave in to the request. He accommodated. He agreed. He took the shame. He began to divide his property, liquidate his assets, even had to borrow some money in order to come up with enough cash to equal half of his holdings. And then, The boy took it. That sorry excuse for a son. Took it, packed up his things, and headed down the road. Didn't even let his family know where he went. He took all of that money from them, risked their financial future, and he was treating them like they had done something wrong to him, instead of him having done so much wrong to them. But even though he didn't write, we heard stories. Because, you know, he didn't try to live under the radar. He went off to that land and began to live large with his daddy's money. And the stories of travelers would find their way back to us. We heard about the luxurious place that he had, the lavish parties that he threw, the way he was trying to worm his way into the jet-set crowd. He was just simply too big for his britches, thought he was going to be some kind of big businessman, so he went into one get-rich-quick project after another, and of course, none of them panned out. Those were the stories we were hearing until suddenly one day there were no more stories. Silence. No one knew anything about what was going on with him. We found out later that it was because he had run through all his money. He had been evicted from his place. His so-called friends had dropped him. He had had to go to work for a pig farmer as a hired hand. A pig farm. Oh. Oh. So he was no longer going to the fancy parties. He was no longer part of the big deals. And so there were no stories to find their way back to us. And I think that was the hardest moment for the parents. Certainly they were pained and worried by the stories of what he had been doing as they came back to him, his exploits, but they at least knew he was all right. When the words stopped, they didn't know any longer. The shame they tried to bear with dignity, but the not knowing, it was slowly killing them. They no longer knew, even they didn't know where he was, but not only that, they didn't even know if he still was. His mother became so quiet. It seemed like overnight her hair turned gray. She stopped coming to the well when the other women would be there. She withdrew into herself, into her home. And she seemed to grow smaller somehow. Every time I saw her, she seemed to have shrunk, as though the weight of this worry was pressing her down until she just would become nothing. But it was the father that we were really worried about. On the surface, it appeared to be that he was coping. He kept working his fields with his remaining son. He sold the crops. He went to synagogue. He lived up to his obligations. But even though he was present with us, he didn't seem to be there anymore. Do you know what I mean? And then he started this strange behavior. He would suddenly stop what he was doing and stare down the road that his son had left by. Just stand there staring. First thing in the morning, last thing at night, odd times during the day, he would just stop and stare, lost. It was heartbreaking to see. His friends tried to talk some sense to him, tried to get him to come to grips with reality. They pointed out that Even if his son was still alive, and that was seeming less and less likely all the time, even if he was still alive, he was never going to come back to this village. He had burned his bridges. He had made too many bad decisions. He was just not welcome here any longer. Even with the love of that father, none of us, well, obviously the father, maybe the mother, but none of us wanted that boy back. We would have been just as happy to never hear another word about him. But his father refused to give up. His father clung to the belief that someday his son would come home. And you know what? He was right. Because one day, that boy just suddenly appeared in the village again. I didn't recognize him at first. He had changed so much. That old cocky walk he had turned into a defeated shuffle. He had lost, 30, 40 pounds. He just was down to nothing. His old fancy clothes were now little more than rags, and he wouldn't look at anybody. Just kept shuffling toward home, muttering the same three phrases under his breath like some kind of crazy person. I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm not worthy to be called your son. Treat me as a hired hand. I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as a hired hand. I have sinned against... But none of that mattered to his father. His father had no problem recognizing him, even from a distance. As soon as he spotted that boy, he went running toward him. He went running toward him. It was shocking. Men of his station don't run. But he went running, came up to the boy, enveloped him in this huge hug, held on tightly, didn't let the boy get a word in edgewise, didn't ask him to explain himself, didn't ask him to tell him how he was going to set right all that he had done wrong, didn't ask him to justify the mistakes that he had made. No, he just held on to him. And he wept. And then he announced there was going to be a party in this boy's honor. And everyone was invited. Well, we should have refused to go. We certainly weren't celebrating the return of this young man. And it really wasn't a very good thing for us to be enabling this delusion that his father was holding, that everything was somehow going to be all right now that his boy was back. But curiosity won the day. That and a morbid fascination with what was going to happen next with this family. I have to admit, could not understand anything about what they had done, how it had gone. I thought, maybe if I show up at the house, I'll get some idea how this respected leader could make such incomprehensible choices. And you know what I did? I did get some answers that night. The first thing I realized was that just because the son had come home and the father had forgiven him, everything wasn't now perfect in that family. It wasn't some kind of magic elixir that made everything right. The older son was sulking around the edges of the party the whole night, and his poor mother just seemed to not know what role she was supposed to take. Was she supposed to be the grand hostess of the evening? Was she supposed to be nursemaid to her weak, almost dead younger son? Should she be advocating for her forgotten older son? But as I watched and realized how much work this family still had to do, I also thought they may be able to do it. they just may be able to pull this off because of that father and because of his focus and the persistence of his love, not only for the youngest son, but for his wife and his older boy, for each member of that family. And watching his fierce love, I remembered a story that the rabbi told in synagogue one time from the Midrash. It was a story of a king who had a son who went astray. The son went far off on a journey of 100 days. And his friends came to him and said, "It's time. You should come home. Come home to your king, to the king. Come home to your father." And he said, "But I can't. I can't." And when the father, the king, heard, he sent word to his son and said, "Son, come as far as you can, and I will come the rest of the way to you." And so God says, "Return to me, and I will return to you." As I said, I always knew that boy was going to grow up to be trouble. And I was right. But what I never dreamed is that boy would grow up to be the person who reminded me of the steadfast love of the Lord and the boundless forgiveness that is ours in God. That we have a God that, like that father, returns and returns and returns to us until finally we are brought home, where we are celebrated and restored and healed. So maybe that trouble was worth it. What do you think?